This is the Fennec Pavlik's interview for August 30th, 2005.
Hello?
Hello, this is Anthony Young calling for Mr. Pavlik's, please.
Yes, speaking.
I spoke with Sam Romano last week and interviewed him for a book I'm writing on the Lunar Rover. And he mentioned your name as being heavily involved with the design and said that he might have a chance to speak with you and let you know I would be calling.
Yes, he did mention it, yes.
Do you have a few moments to discuss your work on the rover, Mr. Pavlik?
Yes.
Okay. He had told me that you had been with the GM Defense Research Laboratories for a number of years and involved in various lunar rover concepts. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct, yes.
Okay. He said that you had specifically done a considerable amount of work on the development of the wheel for the LRV. Could you tell me about how you worked on that development program?
Well, yes. The wheel development, you know, was instigated by the fact that under the temperature conditions on the moon, which at night goes down to minus 250 degrees Fahrenheit,
mm-hmm.
and during the day goes up plus 250 or so, rubber or plastic type materials could not be used,
mm-hmm.
because they would melt or they would get brittle at low temperatures. So we had to invent an all metallic but still flexible wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Since this was a manned vehicle going at a reasonable speed, like 10 miles per hour or so over rugged terrain, so it had to provide the astronauts a good ride quality.
Yes.
So the wheel had to be flexible, at the same time had good flotation over the soft lunar terrain coverage.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we started developing this all-metallic type of wheels. We tried many different types and different materials, from titanium, high-strength steel or so, and finally kind of nailed down this final configuration, which was a flexible wireframe type of a wheel, which you, I'm sure, have seen
yes.
many photos of.
Mm-hmm.
And the behavior of the wheel was like a low-pressure pneumatic tire. So it was flexible, it had a good footprint over the soft terrain, so it didn't sink into the soil.
Yes.
At the same time, it provided a certain amount of damping, because the interwoven wires, as they deformed, they had a friction at the joints. So that provided a kind of a damping effect. So it didn't bounce just like a spring would.
Yes.
And the other thing we had to be concerned about, that because of the low gravity on the moon, the wheel had to be designed very soft to have a deformation under the static load of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, the dynamic forces, the inertial forces, are of course the same on the moon as everywhere else. So when you run into a rock or an obstacle, the impact force would be the same as would be on Earth. So that's why if you look at the wheel, which is kind of transparent because of the open wire mesh construction, mm-hmm. you can see a secondary wheel inside, which is made out of titanium spring material.
Yes, the hoops, I believe.
The hoops. Mm-hmm. And as the flexible part of the wheel deforms when it runs into an obstacle, it would engage this secondary hoop wheel, and that would take the dynamic impact force.
I see.
Because the nominal load on the wheels was about 67 pounds.
Just vehicle weight, or is
just
that with the yes?
Just the vehicle and the astronauts and all the equipment on board.
Yes.
When it was sitting on the moon, okay, the wheel would have a static load of something like 67 pounds.
Okay.
But when it ran into a rock, let's say at 10 miles per hour, the forces would be more than 10 times as high.
Yes, that's right.
So we had to design the wheel to impact forces like that.
Okay.
So we actually, in the testing, because of safety factors, we were tested the wheel up to 1,000 pound of force, which was able to take.
I see, and that was what you would say is an instantaneous impact force.
Yes.
A transient force.
Yes, it's a transient force when it would hit something, you know, at the top speed.
Okay.
Never happened mm-hmm. On the moon, but the astronauts did report that the wheel was impacting obstacles and deformed so that the secondary hoop wheel came into work.
I see. I'm sure you discussed the concern of the wire mesh and the riveted chevrons being permanently deformed as a result of impacts, where the original form and shape of the wheel would actually be distorted. Was that a concern, and how did you feel you could resolve that?
Well, it was a concern, but because of this secondary wheel inside, the wheel could be deformed, you know, all the way to contact the secondary hoop wheel without any permanent deformation.
Oh, I see, okay.
So it had really the secondary purpose as well.
I see.
To prevent the permanent deformation or dent into the primary flexible portion of the wireframe wheel.
Okay. How did you come up with make the decision on what type of wire diameter and composition for each strand? How did that come about?
Well, that come about from a stress analysis which we performed. Because if you use a fewer number of spring wires,
mm-hmm.
they would have to be thicker to support the same load.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have thicker, larger diameter wires, at the same deformation, the stresses would be higher.
I see, yeah.
So we optimized that and came up with a relatively small diameter, high-strength steel spring wires, so that the stress levels would be below the allowable level. And this was really defined by fatigue properties.
Oh, I see.
So the spring itself would take that deformation easily, but if you repeat this deformation thousands of times, then the metal fatigue would come into picture.
I see.
So we tested the wheels to a about 120 kilometers or so, which is more than twice the expected usage. And to prove that the fatigue life of the wheel is also acceptable.
Oh, all right. Okay. Mr. Romano was also telling me that when the Boeing concept was being developed for the request for proposal, that because of the overall length of the rover, it would obviously have to be a folded type of chassis. And he tells me you were also involved in that design and development.
That is correct. My group, I was the engineering manager of the group which was developing this concept and eventually the vehicle part of the lunar rover.
Okay.
My group came up, or I came up actually, but they worked the details on the concept of folding up the vehicle.
Okay.
And the vehicle is about over 120 inches long, about the size of a Jeep. But the space available was only about 60 inches. So it had to be really folded so that it takes up half the length. And in addition, it had to fit into a triangular shape envelope, which was one corner of the lunar extension module, the LEM.
Oh yeah, the quadrant. Mm-hmm.
Yes, one quadrant. And to accomplish that, came up with the idea of folding the chassis at both ends, 180 degrees, so kind of folding it over on itself. And then the suspension linkage was designed such that when we folded the wheels under the chassis, they took up a 45-degree angle.
I see.
And it was all the geometry of the suspension linkage design. So once you folded the suspension links under, and then you folded the chassis extensions on both ends, then it took up this triangular shape envelope, which was, as I mentioned, you know, less than half the length and about the chassis width, of course, was the same. But the belly of the vehicle was facing outboard this quadrant.
Yes.
And at the same time protecting the inside of the critical vehicle components like electric motors, drives, and steering mechanisms.
Okay. What was the name of the group that worked to develop this that you just mentioned? Was it a specific name?
Well, it was the Lunar...
I think I know. I think, Mr. Romano, the Lunar and Planetary Vehicle...
That's correct.
Okay, yes, I have that written down.
Yeah, right.
Okay. It was a very compressed program to develop this vehicle.
Yes, it was, yeah. Now, luckily, of course, we were working on lunar vehicle programs prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably Mr. Romano explained that.
Yes, he did.
We have joint programs with Boeing on the Mobile Lunar Laboratory.
MOLAB, yes.
Mm-hmm. MOLAB. Mm-hmm. And then the LSSM, which was a somewhat less ambitious, but still relying on a separate Saturn launch type of a vehicle. And so during those programs, we were already working on the wheel concept, the wheel drive concepts. So let's say, when we finally got the contract, and we have been left 18 months to deliver the first
flight
space-qualified vehicle,
mm-hmm.
we already started sort of like running. And of course we still had to do the design or the development or testing and building the flight qualifier hardware and then a qualification testing, which had to be done in about 18 months.
Yes.
So it was a very rush program. You know, at the peak, we had as many as 400 people working just on the GM side of the program.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And of course, it did a lot of testing because it was a man-rated system. Therefore, all the reliability, quality requirements which applied to Apollo also applied to this lunar rover.
Yes.
So we built probably the equivalent of 7 or 8 vehicles for just test purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Mobility test vehicle, which we took the astronauts out to the Pismo Beach sand dune area, and that was the kind of a proving ground where they first tested the mobility capability.
Oh, I see. Yes, I think I've seen a picture of
Jack Lazma.
Yes, that's right.
And Jerry Carr.
Yes, who eventually flew on Skylab.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But they were assigned to work with us on the design and development phase. So they were very frequently spending many days and weeks out here during the design development.
Okay. I believe I might be able to locate them for an interview as well. They would be a good source of information.
Yes, they would be a very good source. Yes.
Okay. The other question I want to ask you was a story that Mr. Romano related where when he found out that there would only be one Saturn V launch vehicle, that really changed the size and scope of any prospective rover that may go to the moon. So he said he went back from his meeting in Washington to Santa Barbara to work with his group, which included you, on developing this folding vehicle. And then they went to Huntsville to make a presentation to Dr. von Braun. Were you with him during that trip?
Yes, I was.
Okay, that's what I thought.
It was, of course, not the only presentation. We were giving, you know, these dog and pony shows.
Yes.
Many places, headquarters, Houston, Huntsville. And yes, we did go to Huntsville and got a very good reception from the technical group of people to our presentation. And to kind of embellish our pitch, besides slides and presentations, we built a 1/6 scale model of the proposed concept.
Mm-hmm.
And we took that along with us to these presentations. This was a radio remote controlled little model with electric motors and steering, which was functionally the exact representation of our proposed concept.
Oh, I see.
And it could be folded up to fit into this triangular envelope we had made available for this purpose. So we did demonstrate that at the Huntsville presentation as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mr. Romano probably told you the story that after the presentation, the technical guy suggested to show it to Dr. von Braun.
Yes, that's correct.
And so we said yes, okay, and then they led us to his office, opened the door, and asked me to remotely control the vehicle into his office.
So you did the control of the vehicle into Dr. von Braun's office?
Yes.
I see.
This motto was actually built by myself.
Oh, I see.
Still sitting in my closet here.
I was wondering where that might be. I'm sure that was quite a memento of that, because also quite a bit of expenses involved in making a fully functional model like that.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's a lot of work, okay, but it was free work. I did it my home. Even my wife contributed in sewing up the seats for the astronauts. And we used a G.I. Joe toy, which had an astronaut dress, you know.
Suit, yes.
A suit, yeah. Which was actually one of my boy's toy at the time.
I see.
My boy was 9 years old at the time, so I stole his G.I. Joe and used it for this purpose. It happened to be exactly the right scale for a 1/6 scale lunar rover.
I see. It obviously made quite an impression on Dr. von Braun.
Yes, it was. He was, of course, very surprised to see something is coming into his office. He was on the telephone at the time and watching this little thing rolling in, and then got up, and then we explained what it's all about, the concept, and never know, it may have helped to sell the project.
Yeah, I'm sure it made quite an impression on him. Based on what Mr. Romano said, it seemed to really create a catalyst in Dr. von Braun's mind that this, it could in fact be done.
Yes, because it was a big question, you know, really, is it possible to do? Because some time back, they gave up on the rover for the Apollo program.
Yes.
And so we took a considerable amount of selling effort to get the idea across that it is possible to do, and it could be done within the time frame.
Was that model also folded up and placed in the 1/6 lunar module model that was also brought along to show Dr. von Braun?
We didn't take along the lunar landing module.
I see.
Because that would have been too big.
I see.
We did have one in Santa Barbara, and we had photos and...
Oh, there was also a film, wasn't there?
There was also a film demonstrating that, how this vehicle folded up, fitting to that corner, and how in steps it was deployed.
I see. Well, the deployment system was also very key. I'm working on that section of the chapter. And that originally, there was a fully automatic deployment system proposed. Was that your preference, or did you feel a less complicated deployment system would be better?
Well, we felt that it would be better to have a less complicated system. The actual deployment mechanism and concept was developed by the Boeing part of the team. They came up with the idea of spring-loading all the joints and designing a mechanism by which the astronauts only had to pull a tape, and as they pulled the tape, it activated a number of latches which released the spring-loaded joints, and the vehicle unfolded automatically.
I see.
So it was a kind of a semi-automatic deployment system.
Okay. Where were, once the, what other problems do you felt were particularly difficult to resolve with regards to the design of the rover aspects you worked on?
Well, we already discussed the wheels.
Yes.
And the folding concept. Those were one of the tough problems. But then there were, of course, all the other environmental design problems. Design for the 1/6 gravity condition, design for the vacuum condition,
mm-hmm.
and the temperature extremes.
He told me that the damper was a particular problem.
Well, it was a critical item because of the low gravity and the relatively high speed drive over uneven terrain.
Yes.
The dampers had to work very hard. As a matter of fact, you know, just almost about half the energy which was expended was expended in the damping system,
mm-hmm.
absorbed by the damper because of the dynamic movements of the wheel and the vehicle.
I'm sure a lot of heat was generated while this, because without any air to dissipate the heat, I'm sure that.
That was another critical design, the thermal design problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to be very careful that all the heat generating elements, like steering mechanism, drive motors, had a direct exposure to the cold space.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had to get rid of the heat into the space. There was no air cooling or water cooling or something
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
that.
Yes.
And the selection of the lubricants is also, it played a big role. Like in the design of the wheel drive systems, which were a fairly high power requirement, we, because of the lubrication problems, we selected a transmission which was reducing the high speed motor speed to the wheel speed to an 80-to-1 gear reduction.
Mm-hmm.
We selected a so-called harmonic drive transmission which could be specially designed so that the high-speed bearings were enclosed in a pressurized environment.
Yes, that's correct.
And therefore, we could use a liquid lubricant inside these high-speed rotating elements.
Mm-hmm.
A silicone oil type which can take temperatures of over 400 degrees F.
I see. And all these, of course, were tested once.
All these were tested
at in Santa Barbara?
First in Santa Barbara, we could test in thermal vacuum chambers the component level testing, like the motor transmission assembly, steering gear assembly, and so on. And the final qualification testing was done in Seattle at the Boeing facility.
Okay.
Where they had a large thermal vacuum chamber where a complete system could be put inside.
Yes.
And then the complete mission simulated over moving belt type of a road system on which obstacles were mounted.
Okay.
And then for about 120 kilometers over the temperature, sun elevation ranges, this whole qualification test was performed.
I see. Okay. Because the I did have an opportunity to speak with Mr. Ron Creel, who was a thermal engineer,
uh-huh.
on the program who told me about they did both thermal and vacuum testing, and oftentimes simultaneously.
Yes.
Doing both of these.
That's correct. Yeah.
I guess the only thing that couldn't be simulated on Earth, of course, was the 1/6 G aspect of it, but...
Well, we did simulate that, and the way we simulated that was that the rolling road, which was, you know, like a moving belt.
Yes.
We tilted that to 82 degrees so that the normal force to this simulated road was exactly 1/6 of the actual weight on Earth. So in a way, this was also simulated in addition to the vacuum and the temperature environment.
Mm-hmm.